I'm Sally Helm with the podcast History This Week. In each episode, we serve as your eyes and ears into history's biggest events and the lesser told stories, ones you might not even know happened. Find History This Week on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
97.1 FM Talk on demand audio.
I thought we would saunter into the 5 o'clock hour, ladies and gentlemen, with a little Sade on the bumper music list this afternoon.
He's laughing with another girl.
See, there's my old DJ skills kicking in. Hit that post. Most of you don't know what that means, but I'm proud of myself. I just have to say that. We have Carl Cannon. He's one of my favorite political types. You know, here's what's interesting about this presidential race, and I think that Carl's going to highlight this. Trump appears to be closing very strong. And I was, many of you know, I was very concerned about where this campaign was going to head after late August and even the early parts in mid-September. But things are kind of clicking right now, and some of the polling is really encouraging in Michigan and even in Wisconsin. So, and there's Senate races that are looking real good for Republicans. So we'll get with Carl here at the bottom of the hour of Real Clear Politics. His dad, of course, was a legend in Washington, Luke Cannon. Carl Cannon at 525, plus an audio cut of the day. So there was an interesting story that was in our local paper today about a clash that a couple of so-called sovereign citizens had with police officers in Troy. I have invited former St. Louis County Police Chief Tim Fitch, who is a regular on the roundtable, to join us this afternoon to break this down a little bit. Tim, how are you?
I'm doing great, Mark.
First and foremost, how's your place in Florida? What do you know?
Well, our place in Florida, we don't know because we're both in St. Louis right now. But the wife's car is parked at the Sarasota-Bradenton International Airport, which isn't far from the water, so we have concerns about how it fared. But the good thing is it's our company car.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah, and then our where we live is 12 miles from the ocean, so we don't get storm surge, and we're on the fourth floor of our building. So we think we never lost power. That's a good sign, but we really don't know at this point the shape of it.
Did you have some damage from Helene or not?
No, absolutely not.
That's
we
good.
Did from Ian. We had some fence damage and some tree damage, but we've been through what, three hurricanes down there. I went through Debbie. I was actually there when Debbie hit. We had 17 inches of rain in 24 hours with Debbie. But other than flooded roads and those type of things, we were fine.
Yeah, and, you know, that's what they're, some of the rainfall totals, we've been watching these, Sue and I have, you know, 15, 16, 17, 18 inches in some of these areas. Now, we can get paralyzed very easily with 2 inches of rain in a very short time, or maybe, you know, on the extreme end, 4 to 6, but I can't imagine 3 to 4 times that amount, right?
Yeah, exactly. And you know how flat Florida is. It's flatter than Kansas. It's the flattest state in the country. So there's nowhere for that water to go. So it really does pool and flood. But it tends to go down pretty quickly.
Well, I'm glad that so far things look like they're okay. And, you know, keep us posted on that. The situation in Troy, it's kind of complicated a little bit. When I saw the headline this morning, this whole sovereign citizen stuff, can you explain that? Have you encountered that before? These are folks that feel like they the laws just don't apply to them, right?
Yeah, that's right. They've been around as long as I can remember. So I've been in law enforcement now in 40 years, and they existed back then. And it's a small group, mostly in rural areas. So you don't see them in urban areas like St. Louis County as much. You might see them going through. And they'll usually have a hand-drawn license plate or something like that, you know, because they don't get driver's licenses for the most part. Or if they do, they issue their own. You know, it's some of those type of things. And it's just a different mindset that they actually believe in all of that, that they are not subject to any domestic laws. That's how they see the world.
So this is a couple. Their names are Andrew and Aaliyah Menson. They're from Troy, and they post this body cam footage over the weekend of what happened here. And Officer Todd Plum is the cop. He tries to pull them over. They don't pull over right away, and they do have like a weird license plate. And they, when you watch the video, they kind of roll down this road that's a dead end. And the officers, as they would be, are very cautious approaching the vehicle. And let me play a little audio here of what it sounded like.
Hey, driver, step on out for me. Step on out for me, okay?
Getting out on my own free wishing.
All right, man, come on back. Just relax. Relax. No, stop. Stop. Put your hands behind your back. Put your hands behind your back right now.
Yeah, he's not cooperating from the very beginning. And they're hitting him with a taser here.
That's a taser.
Stop,
Get down on the ground. Get down on the ground.
Now, he doesn't even seem to be affected by the taser that much. And then the wife is warned.
Ma'am, have a seat in your car. Ma'am, have a seat in your vehicle. Right here. Right over here. Sit in the right here in the passenger seat, or I'm going to place you under arrest. This is the last time I'm telling you. This is the last time. Stay right here. If you move from here again, you're going to be stopped. You're going to be placed under arrest. Do you understand? Yes or no?
Well, she is then. She's dragged from the car.
I told you to stay in the seat. You did not. Get out of the car. I don't care if you're recording. Get out.
Get out.
Now, the kids are there, and then she apparently is knocked unconscious. So, Tim, like, I don't have a lot of mixed feelings about this, because from the very beginning, you have another situation where this person is not complying. The cops seem relatively calm when they approach the vehicle. They don't know what's in that vehicle. That could be someone with a gun. I was very critical on the Tyreek Hill thing from a few weeks ago, because I thought that cop got a little too hot-headed, even though Tyreek was at fault as well. But what do you make of this one? I'm very curious about your opinion.
Well, that's exactly what we talked about in that case in Miami. Was it started with someone not complying. That's how almost all of these, I mean, usually that's how they all start, and then it went downhill from there. And my criticisms of Miami PD is that, you know, you're supposed to de-escalate the situation, not ramp it up. Now, keep in mind, this video that was released, did you see who released the video, where it came from?
Well, not really. That's why I was confused, because it's the body cam video, but it was couple that released it, right?
That's right. So they say they got a copy of the body. What's missing is a lot of information. So I don't know, just from looking at the video that they released, what's true and what isn't true, and what they left out, what they cut up. You can tell at different points that the video is choppy. It like, you go from this scene to all of a sudden you're now in this scene, and you didn't get to see what happened up till then. So it looks to me like maybe they made some edits to the video. I don't know that for a fact, but I'm always suspicious when somebody else has the video in their hands and then they release it with their narrative. And I don't know if the police department plans on doing that, and Troy releasing their video with their own description of that. But with that said, I don't understand. She was loud. She was obnoxious. She was filming them. By the way, those are all things that you get to do. You know, you get to be loud. You get to be obnoxious. You know, the last thing that any police officer wants to do is arrest parents in front of their kids. That's always an absolute last resort, because when you do that, you no longer have the parents there. What are you going to do with the kids? Or you're going to have to place them in juvenile, or, you know, find foster. You know, so those are usually last resort type of things. So I don't know what was in the officer's mind. And also, we have to keep in mind that the video is from the camera perspective, not from the officer's perspective. So we don't know what they saw that gave them concerns. But I also don't understand what she was being charged with. Following all that, and I also have heard, and I guess I read in the article, that prosecutor dropped any charges against her. So that's not a surprise that happened. But, you know,
he's been charged with resisting arrest, felony property damage for damaging the inside of the police car, and fourth degree assault. He was not charged with speeding or a license plate violation. So they described the license plate. Sue, did you see the video by any chance?
No.
Okay, but this is one of these things with the sovereign citizen. So the guy, Andy Menson is his name. He's 33. He's an auto mechanic. He says that he has high functioning autism, ADHD, and epilepsy. He's driving his wife's Audi, and they have a license plate that he called a Z plate. They bought it for $25 on the internet. It features an eagle, a sideways flag, and the words "private automobile, not for hire." So they claim that they've driven for 3 months, never stopped by the cops. And he says he didn't get a license plate because he didn't have the money for insurance. He insists that the state should recognize this plate. That's how they feel, right? So I'm legal. I don't want any part of you. He even announces, you could hear him at the beginning of the, you know, the video and the audio. He goes something like, you know, I'm coming out, you know, compliance. I can't remember what the words were, but he acts like he's coming out to comply, and he's got paperwork with him, Chief, as well.
Yeah, it's probably some sort of paperwork saying they have no authority over him or over his vehicle, or they can't order him what to do. That's typically what they carry with them, those kind of orders. And it's the orders are written up in their own court. it's a very interesting sect.
Well, the thing, I always kind of look at these from a different perspective, maybe a variety of perspectives, and certainly I did that with Tyreek Hill. But in this situation with these officers, I don't think that they escalated things. I think that the couple escalated things, for sure. And then if you put yourself in the cop's position, What were you supposed to do after the guy is refusing to cooperate and then you tase him and he's still not going down? So what choices are the cops left with at that point? Not that we want the woman dragged out of the car and unconscious, but she wasn't cooperating either.
Yeah, I would just tell you that everything I saw them doing with him looked perfectly reasonable. You've heard me probably say before, it's awful, but it's lawful. It doesn't look good. It never looks good. Anytime you have someone resisting arrest, it doesn't look good. Now with her, you know, clearly she was wanting to get involved and interfere in the arrest. That was clearly going on. But I wasn't sure exactly what, you know, charge that she had, but apparently whatever it was.
It doesn't matter. It's moot at this point, right? Yeah, exactly.
That's right. And as far as writing tickets, they should have written him a ticket for why they stopped him. Speeding, from what I understand, and no valid license plates. I'm not sure why they didn't or if they just didn't make it into the article.
That doesn't make sense either, but maybe some more questions than answers here on this one. But I appreciate you jumping on here this afternoon.
Yep.
I'm asking everyone, though, as I don't know if you'll be on the roundtable here before Election Day. What's your gut check on the election? Any thoughts there?
I personally believe Trump is going to pull it off. I really do believe that. I think we're seeing many signs of that around the country. People are now into the point where they have to make a decision. They have to make a decision. I think that's why you're starting to see Trump's polling numbers going up, as they finally made their decision because they're getting ready to go in and vote. You know, there's so much early voting nowadays in the country. So I think he's going to be fine.
I think you're probably right about that. But I appreciate coming on here. Good luck with everything in Florida as well.
All right, thanks.
All right, take care. That is Chief Tim Fitch. Used to be, of course, police chief, also St. Louis County councilman. He was my councilman here in St. Louis County. So I wanted to play some audio here from Jackie Heinrich and Alejandro Mayorkas, who, of course, is the Homeland Security Secretary, because this is an interesting story. There's an ISIS plot to affect the elections here, and Jackie Heinrich was in the press room trying to grill Mayorkas on this today, and it got pretty hot. This is, if it wasn't for the hurricane and some audio that I have from that, this would probably be audio cut of the day. But Jackie tries to press here, and this is pretty interesting. Check it out.
This Afghan national who was working for the CIA in Afghanistan was arrested for planning an Election Day terror plot. He was brought to the U.S. after Afghanistan collapsed. Your agency says as part of the SIV program. The State Department is telling us he was not part of the SIV program, which had strenuous vetting. They say he was never issued an SIV or immigrant visa, and DHS paroled him into the U.S. They further expect the court document to be updated to reflect this from the DOJ side. So, Mr. Secretary, how was this man brought into the U.S.? What screening did he undergo? What did he apply for to get here?
Jackie, I'm here in North Carolina communicating with the individuals who are still conducting search and rescue operations. Over 200 people have lost their lives in Hurricane Helene. We have reports that at least 10 individuals have lost their lives.
So, look, he's not answering the question. He's deflecting there. Now, look, that's not to say that that's not an important topic, but this is pretty serious. So they have charged Nasir Ahmad Tahidi with planning this attack in support of ISIS on Election Day. It was supposed to be a terrorist attack on Election Day. He was arrested in Oklahoma City. He made his initial appearance in federal court on Tuesday. He remains in custody. The complaint was unsealed this week. Tahidi and unnamed co-conspirators, including a juvenile, by the way, who's his brother-in-law, were followers of ISIS, took steps to carry out an attack in the U.S., including by trying to sell their family home, relocate their families abroad, and purchase firearms and ammunition. 27-year-old guy. He comes to the U.S. in September of 21, days after the U.S. withdrew from Afghanistan. The criminal complaint said he's currently on parole status pending adjudication of his immigration proceedings. So here you have someone else, maybe not from the southern border, but someone who should not be in this country. So Jackie Heinrich tries to press here.
We're getting conflicting answers from your agency and from the State Department about a man who was arrested for an Election Day terror plot. How do you not have those answers prepared?
Jackie, that's not what I said. What I said is I'd be pleased to discuss this issue at a different time, but I am here to speak about disasters that have impacted people's lives in real time, and that is a subject that I am addressing today.
Mr. Secretary, can you assure people that appropriate steps have been taken to secure the country against these kinds of threats? Because the outstanding question is whether this man was radicalized before the U.S. government brought him here or afterward. And people should be concerned
about
that.
Jackie, your persistence in questioning can be matched by my persistence in answers.
Oh, my God.
Are you kidding me?
He's so full of crap. He's another one of these embarrassments that Biden has, you know, hired. By the way, did you hear? Now, you know, Bob Woodward's got this book coming out, and it's got a bunch of blah, blah, blah. And I don't know. That used to be a guy that we would trust, obviously, from Watergate. But I don't know if I can trust him and the crap that he does anymore. But he's got some interesting things in the book, including that Biden can't stand Merrick Garland. Which,
oh, that's interesting.
I think that's interesting. Well, because Merrick Garland is just...
Well, do something about him.
He's just a feeble old man that could have been on the Supreme Court. But this is a big story. You got a guy inspired by ISIS that was going to try to pull a terrorist attack on Election Day.
Good
the
grief.
Records accessed by the FBI show that he allegedly viewed ISIS propaganda, contributed about $540 in cryptocurrency to a charity in Syria, which fronts for and funnels money to ISIS. They searched for access to surveillance and security cameras in Washington, D.C., the suspects did. They checked webcams showing the White House and Washington Monument in late July. They thought that he was seeking out places in which gun laws were more lax. I don't know if that means Missouri or a location like ours. They sent a confidential human source. I mean, the good news here is that there seemed to be pretty good police work in tracking this guy down. They sent a confidential source and then later an undercover FBI agent to secretly interact with the guys as they tried to sell their home and other possessions. And in a September 21st message to a person associated with the terrorist activity, Tawahidi said he had purchased two Kalashnikov rifles and ordered 500 bullets. And the telegram message said, "What do you think, brother? Is it enough or should we increase it?"
Oh,
in subsequent messages, Tawahidi said his father-in-law's house had sold for $185,000. They're going to get the money by next week, October 15th, he asked for help in resettling his family, which included his mother-in-law, wife, their young daughter. So they were trying to, you know, he said, after that, we will begin our duty, God willing, with the help of God, we will get ready for the election day, and was trying to pull something pretty big. So again, good news that they caught him. But in this climate, you can't be resting assured that this is not going to happen, or is, you know,
no.
There's not more plots out there. We certainly learned a lot about that this summer. So there you go. But good work by the FBI in bringing this one down. And shame on Alejandro Mayorkas for not even knowing anything about it, right? Good work, Jackie Heinrich. Coming back with Carl Cannon next.
I'm Sally Helm with the podcast History This Week. In each episode, we serve as your eyes and ears into history's biggest events. Major elections, world wars, scientific breakthroughs. But we also bring you into the smaller, behind-the-scenes stories, the unsung heroes, secret meetings, even personal grudges that changed the course of history. Listen to and follow History This Week, an Odyssey podcast in partnership with the History Channel. Available now for free on the Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
I have an audio cut of the day before the afternoon is up here in about 15 minutes, and I will not be here tomorrow. We won't have a rear and round sale. I'm a little sad about that because we're leading up to the election, but I needed to take tomorrow off. Ryan Recker will be here filling in. We'll get at it again with the roundtable next week, and I'll be back on Monday. Sue is off tomorrow as well, so we're taking a little early weekend, 3-day break before the election. Speaking of which, he's one of the best reporters in all of Washington, Carl Cannon from Real Clear Politics, the Washington Bureau Chief, back with us this afternoon. Carl, how are you?
I'm good. Good.
Any, you know, this hurricane stuff, I don't know if you have any connections to any of those parts of the country, but how about those tornadoes? You know, we're used to tornadoes here in the Midwest, but those looked like even worse than what we usually get.
Well, they looked bad. And also then, as if there's not enough to worry about, the Daily Mail had a piece this morning about some guy steps out of his truck and there's an alligator, a big, huge gator biting. As he opens the door, it's snapping and biting the tire, biting the side of the door.
Can you blame the gator? You know, I was actually thinking about this. We talked about it a little bit yesterday. I actually had a cat for many years, about 17 years, that had been a rescue from Katrina. In the aftermath of Katrina, you know, you have all these animals that are wandering around. And I mentioned this to Sue yesterday. I thought, in North Carolina in particular, there have to be so many of these, you know, pets and even non-domesticated animals that didn't make it through all that.
Well, and there's bears in North Carolina.
All that stuff, yeah, right? Yeah, unbelievable. Yeah. Well, let's kind of start. I hate to make that about the politics, but aren't there or wouldn't there be legitimate concerns moving into an election that's 3.5 weeks away that some of these folks might not be able to get to a ballot box?
They're in North Carolina, which is, you know, practically even in the Real Clear Politics polling average. There are
hundreds of thousands of people who are displaced, who maybe not be able to go to their voting place, can't find their voting cards. It's a real mess. And in Florida, of course, you have Vice President Harris, you know, picking a fight with Ron DeSantis for some reason. You know, politics of hurricanes are complicated. Just remember, I remember George W. Bush and Katrina.
Oh, sure.
He never quite recovered from it.
Well, and I'm not so sure this administration is going to recover of it, just because I think that they're also tagged with, appropriately so, a lot of the stuff that's happened with the economy. And if people are looking truly for a change, let me kind of say this. If I go to Real Clear Politics, Carl, right now, I see some pretty encouraging polls if I'm a Trump fan when it comes to Michigan and Wisconsin in particular.
Well, we have new polls out today, and they're worrisome to the Democrats.
Yeah.
Because, first of all, Ohio has tightened up in terms of the Senate race. Sherrod Brown now is vulnerable. In Montana, it's slipping away from John Tester. Joe Manchin, that Manchin seat's gone. So that's three right there. And they only need to, you know, pick up one or two if they don't win the White House. So in the Senate, they're feeling good about. And those swing state polls, you know, these new polls out this morning, all of it, it's very tight. You know, two of them are tied. Trump has a 1 or 2 point lead in four of them, and Harris has a 1 point lead in the other. It's all within the margin of error. But if you're a Democrat, here's your fear that Trump, that pollsters haven't still got it right, and that he's going to outperform his polls the same way he did in 2016 and 2020. And if he does that, the Republicans are going to win.
Well, yeah, and that's, you know, who knows what's going to happen between now and then, because you have these, you know, challenges when it comes to voting. But I will say that when, you know, let's go back a few weeks here, and I've been honest with the audience. If you talked to me, and we did talk in August, I wasn't very optimistic that Trump could win. I'm starting to feel otherwise right now, better chance. Now, my gut check is usually wrong on these things. But the reason I bring that up is because if you go back a few weeks, Harris was nowhere to be found, right? She's doing this stuff on the stump and doing the same speech, but she's not doing interviews. Well, all of a sudden now she's doing interviews, and she's doing some of them, of course, most of them in friendly territory. But doesn't that tell you that they're worried with her getting out there a lot more?
Well, I don't know. I think they tell you they planned always to bring her out slowly, but and these interviews are not very risky for her. You know, Stephen Colbert, and she's going to fans.
Yes.
You know, but she's not really doing well in these interviews. The 60 Minutes interview with Bill Whitaker, she kind of meandered, wouldn't answer direct questions. You know, she still hasn't held a press conference. And that's a different
animal.
Well,
she won't do that before the election. I can guarantee that. That's way too much risk, right?
Well, think of that, though. You have a presidential. She never ran in the primary.
It's terrible.
So she hasn't had a press conference since she became a candidate from July until November. I think it's a scandal.
I think it is, too. And I don't know why. You know, you hear it every once in a while from, you know, some of the New York Times, Washington Post types. But why aren't they, you know, screaming a little louder to the campaign? Maybe they are behind the scenes, but it doesn't seem that way.
Come on, pal. You know why. They want her to win.
Well, I know. That's true. Thank you for confirming that, Carl. I appreciate that. On the media bias front, look, you saw, you have to have some interesting thoughts. Did you hear that conference call that was leaked from Monday in that editorial meeting about Tony DeCoppola?
I have. Well, boy, CBS has had a tough 10 days, haven't they? I mean,
yeah, that's okay with me.
October 1st is their debate, and these two moderators, you know, it looked like it was 3-1 against J.D. Vance. All right, he held his own, but then they decided to celebrate the one-year anniversary of October 7th by dressing down their own popular anchor for asking Connie C. Coates, who's a very controversial, very left-wing guy, some tough questions about this superficial take on Palestine and Israel. And you know, the there's a crowd there at CBS, some sort of diversity committee, and they tut-tutted their way, you know. And
it's unbelievable.
And then then the last thing is, then it looks like the CBS posed an answer.
Right. They edited up something to clean it up. They released the clip that was the real version. Then when it aired on 60 Minutes. Now, look, I'm a broadcaster. I've been in television and radio. I understand editing. I do it a lot. But it did seem in this particular instance they cleaned it up and made it sound a lot better.
Well, that's the thing. They may sound a little better. It still wasn't very responsive, but it was less meandering. It was more focused. And look, Mark, you know, you've been in the business, and I have too. I always tell young people, what's the most obvious bias in the media. Now, this is my for my old print days, but the most obvious bias, the most pervasive bias is not left-right. It's for the good quote. We always make people sound better than they are because we want a quote that advances the story. We're writing a story. We want it to make sense. We clean it up. And but in this case, you know, she it's hard to clean up her quote. She just... She does, the, you know, the conservatives use this phrase word salad, but that's pretty fair description of it.
I'm so glad that you just did that little rant on the right quote, because I always say this when on the rare occasions there's been, you know, I don't know, a couple of dozen maybe over the course of my career when I'm quoted or interviewed in a print publication. It's never what I really say. They always make me sound better, of course, like you said, but it's never really what I say word by word, which I think is interesting for sure.
That's right. Well, and you know, everybody talks. I used to defend Biden a bit on this, and it got hard to defend him because he would lose concentration. But we all misspeak. You know, where he did that thing where he calls President Zelensky President Putin. I mean, look, we've all done that. We've called our wives the wrong name.
But for him, it became chronic.
Well, that's right. Yeah. And also these presidents, you know, we don't let them get away with it. And we probably shouldn't. They need to be sharper than the average bear.
Did you see Dana Carvey and Jim Gaffigan play Biden and Walls on SNL?
I thought Gaffigan had those hand gestures down perfectly.
Oh, my God. It was awesome.
The kind of weird stuff he does, but the Carvey stuff, it was nice seeing him again. He sniffs Kamala's hair. I mean,
I thought it was funny. I've been waiting for that show to be funny and make me laugh for a long time, and they finally did a couple of weeks ago. All right, so here we are. You've kind of given me a bit of a gut check. We are now 3 weeks away from next Tuesday, this election. We got challenges, as we indicated. What's the closing arguments here going to be like, and what's the gut check from Carl Cannon on how this thing goes?
You know, the closing argument is interesting because Kamala Harris was asked by Stephen Colbert, and again, friendly interview. You know, you say you're the change person, but you've been there 3.5 years. What would you change? And she says, first of all, I'm not Joe Biden. And people kind of, they didn't know what to make of it. And then she goes, and I'm really not Donald Trump. Big ovation. That's a liberal crowd. But her closing argument is, I'm not Donald Trump. I don't, you know, that wasn't enough for Hillary Clinton. Will it be enough for Kamala Harris? It could be, but it's not a very, you know, aspirational campaign. It's not a pitch that makes people who are worried about inflation or the border or crime have a lot of confidence in her. But it may get her to, you know, she hopes it gets to her 48-49%, that's enough. Trump's closing argument is things were better before, and you may not like my tweets, and you may not like I call people names, and you may think I'm too old, but deep down you know it was better before, and you kind of think it will be better again if you vote for him.
Yeah.
That's his closing argument.
You know, and so, like, it's so back and forth, and I would say, and I was a critic a few weeks ago, and we even spoke at this time, he just seemed to be meandering a little bit. There was no focus. Now, I was watching him this morning, Carl, in Detroit, and it was a great speech, and he was very personable. He's making people laugh. You know, there was this podcast that he went on with these comedians this week, and I aired some of the audio yesterday, and it was very, very funny. But what was interesting about it is, at the same time I was trying to pull the audio, I didn't know who these podcasters were, right? So I Googled to see who they were. And one of the first things that came up was the New Republic. Okay. So they had done a story about these podcasters and Trump. So I'm like, I'm going to read the story. I mean, I know where they lean, but they made it seem like this appearance by Trump with these podcasters was some sort of disaster. Now, if you listen to it, most regular people would say it's exactly the opposite. They're sitting around there laughing. He's making the host laugh. Vice versa. There was nothing that was bad about it, but it was interesting to see how much that got spun in a completely opposite direction. Not shocking to me, since I follow this media bias all the time.
Well, here's the thing, though. Trump is not, since the time, he was beating Biden. He was going to beat Biden pretty clearly. Since they did the great switcheroo and about Kamala Harrison, he had trouble finding his sea legs. He had trouble figuring out how he wanted to run against her. And it threw him off his game, and he'd complain about it. And that wasn't a good look. You know, you're complaining about your opponent. Come on, let's make your case, buddy. Well, if what you say is right, if that Detroit speech is right, he's going to do another one. You know, he's doing Madison Square Garden.
That's what I saw.
But in 2016, he found his voice. In October, he was not a good candidate till then. If he replicates that today, you know, there's 4 weeks left in the campaign. If he's coming barreling down the stretch the way he did in 2016, that's better for him.
You know, that's an interesting observation. That really is. And, you know, I just kind of go with what I'm seeing, what I'm hearing, I'm observing. I call it like I see it. He was terrible in that second debate. I thought J.D. Vance was great in his debate. And I'm feeling things really kind of move in the right direction for Trump. So we'll see. We're going to have an interesting 3.5 weeks. Carl, always great to chat it up with you. By the way, Carl Cannon does a great political newsletter that's on Real Clear Politics. Now, you only do it 2 days a week, right, at this point?
Tuesdays and Fridays now.
And I love the one, and I know that I've read this before probably on your newsletter in years past. So Tuesday was the anniversary, if I'm not mistaken, of the Great Chicago Fire and the cow kicking over the lantern for Mrs. O'Leary, which didn't happen, of course, but that's the lore, right?
A couple of newspapermen made it up. So, you see, this is not a new problem.
No, it is not. We'll close on that front. Carl, awesome. Thank you very much. We'll talk soon.
Anytime.
Well, often the show comes full circle, and that's exactly what's going to happen on this Thursday afternoon. I saw a story right before I hit the air, and we talked about it a little bit earlier. I actually kind of offered this up as a bit of a quiz to Fred and Sue in the monologue, because there was a video that kind of has made its way across the interwebs and the Twitter this afternoon of, and when I played this to you, Sue, I didn't tell you who it was or anything, and you sort of described it. I wish I could play the audio. There's really no audio. It's just music, but it's an image of a podcaster, a left-wing podcaster on her knees, using a Dorito while wearing the... Let me back up just a little bit. Because what I did wrong was I did not make the connection to the Holy Communion. When I saw... Look, there's two levels of this. When I saw this video, I'm like, this is the weirdest thing that you'll see in politics this year. They want to talk about Trump and J.D. Vance being weird. You can see the video. I put it up on X, formerly Twitter, at Mark Reardon KFTK. But here's what I miss, Sue. Essentially, this is how people are breaking it down now, and I think they're right. This is what Tim Murtaugh says. Tim's a guest on this show. He says, let's be clear what's happening in this video. Governor Whitmer. This is the governor, Gretchen Whitmer, of Michigan, is pretending to give communion to a left-wing podcaster who is on her knees using a Dorito as the Eucharist while she's wearing the governor of Michigan, a Harris Walz hat. And Tim Murtaugh, and now Selena Zito's picking up on this. Look, this is going real viral this afternoon. Do they want zero Catholics to vote for Harris? This is one of the most disrespectful, vulgar things that if you are a Catholic, you can probably see. Look, even before I made the connection to the Eucharist, which I should have made, and I think we started, after we played that, I started talking about it during the break. I'm like, you know, I think that there's like a communion thing going on. Well, as I've seen this develop in the afternoon, I think absolutely that's what they were doing.
Yeah, it looks like they intentionally set it up that way. I think that was the intent.
There's this young, very attractive woman who's on her knees in a pink jumper outfit. Gretchen Whitmer's in a dress. The video starts with this Dorito being fed to this girl and then pans up to Gretchen Whitmer with the Harris Walz camo hat on, and she's looking into the camera. It is, you know, just outside of the Eucharist thing, again, it's bizarre. And how you could, as a governor of a state that really matters and is on the line. Now, this is the kind of thing that could definitely have an impact. But here's the difficulty. The right people have to see it.
That's right.
So is this going to be something in a fair media world? You would wake up tomorrow morning to the CBS Morning Show, to the Today Show, to ABC and George Stephanopoulos, they'd be showing you this weird effed up video of Gretchen Whitmer in Michigan. But I bet you won't see it, because I promise you this, if Mike Parson, can you even imagine? Like, I did this before. Remember I said, can you imagine Mike Parson doing this?
No.
No, I can't imagine anyone doing it. That's why if you had pitched this to someone, who could think, what staffer that works for a governor could sit in a room and say, you know what? This is a good idea. This is going to work for us. Let's give her a Dorito like we're giving communion and mock the Catholic faith.
It's shocking. And, of course, Catholics not the only one who take communion.
Well, us Lutherans do as well. That's right.
The Catholics are the ones who take the wafer. It's right. Like she's being distributed. What the heck?
We did that like when I was a practicing Lutheran, we did as well. So it's not just Catholics. You're right. But wow. So watch for that. I will not be here tomorrow to see what the blowback is. Unfortunately, I think it's going to be one of those things that's just not covered because, in fairness, it's a pretty busy media cycle, right?
Yeah.
But this is where new media really can get things to take off. But will people who are whether they're on the fence or whether they think it's a good idea to support Harris or they turned away by this. Here's what I'd say. What I know is the race is different than it was a month ago in both Michigan and Ohio, and it's favoring Trump right now. Something like this might put it a little bit more in his category, and that could mean he's back in the White House for sure. So keep an eye on stuff like that.
Stand by. Playback ready. Now, the audio cut of the day.
Well, I think he would have made a great president, and I don't know where it's going to take him after he's the governor of Florida, but Ron DeSantis is doing a great job here talking about all the things that are happening in his state. It could have been worse, as he said.
Honestly, for the mobile home stuff, I thought there would be more roof. So some of these mobile homes, I mean, they've done a lot better in Florida over the years. We flew in over a number of the communities as well. There were definitely some roofs that were really bad, but then there were others that did really well.
So we were talking, you know, it seems like from some of the national coverage right now that it was more of a wind event than it was flooding. Tampa had a lot of the water sucked out of the bay, and it was the opposite of what was somewhat, you know, predicted and anticipated. But DeSantis says still a lot of flooding.
This storm came in the way it did. The dirty side of the storm was kind of Sarasota, Charlotte area. And then the northern side of the storm, it actually, instead of doing storm surge into Tampa Bay, it sucked it out. But the northern side of the storm had a lot of precipitation. I mean, they were just getting water dumped on them. So whereas Helene created a lot of storm surge in that part of the state, this one didn't do that there, but it created like inland flooding.
The death toll is very low, which is a good thing. I think the death toll is likely to rise, though, in North Carolina. Ironically, they still haven't found all of the people there. But this is one of the reasons I really love Ron DeSantis, because he does have a way of handling the media in a very effective way. So they're trying to tag this, and you're going to see more and more. Well, this is climate change, right? We got two back-to-back hurricanes that are pretty big. It's got to be climate change. We have to be the cause of this, right? There's no doubt. It has to be us with our big SUVs, etc. Well,
I think most people remember 2004, right? Where we had seemed like you had them every other week in 2004. Then there's also time period, you know, we had from 2006 to 16, we had no hurricanes at all in Florida. There's also been times where we had a lot. The 1940s, we were getting hit a lot. You know, now more recently, we've had a spate of more. So that's just kind of the nature of it. But this really does, it has a lot of similarities to 2004 in terms of the season.
Stop with the facts, Governor of Florida. We don't want to hear those, right? We just want to hear the climate alarmists go off on this. We just hope that people are safe and can recover. It's going to take a lot of effort down there for sure, but under pretty good leadership. Sue, enjoy your Friday off.
Hey, you too.
We'll get together again on Monday. Ryan Recker filling in tomorrow. Have a great Thursday night.
Get more at 971talk.com.
I'm Sally Helm with the podcast History This Week. In each episode, we serve as your eyes and ears into history's biggest events and the lesser told stories, ones you might not even know happened. Find History This Week on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.